In 2020, America made headlines around the world and history for many reasons. One of them is the current crisis we're in, trying to determine the results of our presidential election. Regardless of what side you're on, have you ever thought about what happens to countries when the citizens' voices get usurped if the voting system is corrupt? Let's examine some of the puzzling issues with this current 2020 presidential election. That's what we're going to talk about right after this.
Stretch your mind. It's that time again to yank your brain away from stinking thinking and wash it in new ideas and thoughts. It's time for your checkup from the neck up and maybe a massive mental enema. This yank is going to give your brain a crank, has been called a genius since his patents are part of every mobile device made. Get ready for him to reach into your ears and massage that brain of yours. Your host, Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer.
I think in 2016, as Americans, we learned that polling, well, just didn't work like it was supposed to be. Ever since my childhood, I can remember that polls basically made America knowledgeable about what was going on. However, as an adult in 2016, we all found out almost unanimously that polls don't work. In fact, they're only as good as a software program. Bad data in, bad data out. Again, in 2020, we learned, well, polling was off. But this time, we have more data than ever to look at. Well, what happened in the early hours of November 4th, I think, threw not only America, but the globe for a loop. And everybody's trying to figure out exactly what happened. Now, the majority of the facts that I'm reporting was something that was written about by a fellow by the name of Patrick Basham. He presented it in The Spectator. His article is titled, Reasons Why the 2020 Presidential Election is Deeply Puzzling. And I find it interesting, well, there's a new type of label out there. You know, we've had leftists and we've had neo-Nazis and white supremacists, but now you could be a crank. He says, if only cranks find tabulation strange, then put me down as a crank. Here's what he went on to say. He says, you know, to say that out loud, if you find the results of the 2020 presidential election odd, it is to invite derision. Think about that. Even online, if you post, people could call you a crank or a conspiracy theorist. People are literally fighting over this. He goes on to say, you must be a crank or a conspiracy theorist. Well, mark me down as a crank. See, Patrick Basham, he's a pollster, and he found the election to be deeply puzzling. If you just believe in rule of law and constitutional rights, he goes on to write that he thinks the Trump campaign is well within its rights to contest tabulations. And I agree with him when he says something very strange happened in America's democracy in the early hours of Wednesday, November 4th, and the days that followed. And it's reasonable for a lot of Americans to find out exactly what happened. And that's why I decided to record this program. Patrick gives us some interesting facts. Set aside your political choices and just think about what could happen to a nation, a great nation like the United States of America, if our election systems failed us. Not only failed us, but what if our election systems could be taken over? Now, both sides have talked about this for years. And maybe for the first time, we're really getting a hard look that this can happen. Let me go back to the article. Patrick says, first consider some facts. President Trump received more votes than any previous incumbent seeking re-election. He got 11 million more votes than in 2016. And that's the third largest rise for support ever for an incumbent. All of you know that 2016 was a surprise, but President Trump actually got 11 million more votes than 2016. Patrick goes on to say, by way of comparison, President Obama was comfortably reelected in 2012 with 3.5 million fewer votes than he actually received in 2008. Now think about that. A sitting president getting reelected, but in the second election, actually received 3.5 million fewer votes. Now think to what we're dealing with right now. We have a sitting president who, as far as we know, so far has gotten 11 million more votes than the first time out. What we're going to do is we're going to look at this item by item, just from a statistical basis. If there are anomalies, if it doesn't make sense, well, will that make us all cranks or conspiracy theorists if the numbers don't add up? Well, we'll dive into it right after this.
Do you know why Joe Vaughn loves doing talk radio? Because he has a face made for radio. It's true. Look at his website. He's a nerd hiding out in a biker's body. Speaking of body, how about a quick pee-pee break? Joe Vaughn will be right back. Okay, it's like Albert Einstein said, anyone who's never made a mistake has never tried anything new, and we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. Let's get back to the show.
Patrick Basham writes that Trump's vote increased so much because, according to the exit polls, he performed far better with many key demographic groups. 95% of Republicans voted for him, and he did extraordinarily well with the rural, male, working class whites. He also goes on to say that he earned the highest share of all minority votes for a Republican since 1960. Now think about that. That's a huge point. President Trump earned the highest share of all minority votes for a Republican since 1960. Patrick goes on to say that President Trump grew his support among black voters by 50% over 2016. And nationally, results show that Joe Biden's black support fell below 90%, the level which Democratic presidential candidates usually lose. Now, that's an important fact. You know, all campaigns are run on statistics. Statistics are key. From the Democratic side of the House, they know that if they fall below 90% support within the black voters, black American voters, that that candidate will usually lose. However, we know that President Trump's support grew among black voters by 50% over 2016. All of a sudden, that provable statistic went out the door. That's why we're talking about this. Are these key indicators an indication of a landslide, or the indication that something has happened in our election systems and processes that should concern everybody, regardless of your left, right, in the middle, or way out there? You should be concerned. Now, Patrick goes on to say that Trump increased his share of the national Hispanic vote to 35%. Now, why he says that is that if 60% or less of the national Hispanic vote, it is arithmetically impossible for a Democratic presidential candidate to win Florida, Arizona, Nevada, and New Mexico. That's a razor thin line. Remember, he says that Trump increased his share of the national Hispanic vote to 35%. Now, bellwether states swung further in Trump's direction than in 2016. Each of those states, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, which were considered bellwether states, they swung even further in Trump's direction in 2016. And in 2020, he actually increased even more. You know, in Florida and Ohio and Iowa, each defied America's media polls with huge, huge wins for Trump. And you need to understand, again, the facts. What does history show us? Since 1852, only Richard Nixon has lost the Electoral College after winning this trio. And that was in the 1960 defeat to John F. Kennedy. And that is still, by some scholars, subject of great suspicion. That's that trio, Florida, Ohio, Iowa. Only since 1852, one person, Richard Nixon, lost the Electoral College after winning these trios. Patrick goes on to state that Midwestern states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin always swing in the same direction as Ohio and Iowa, their regional peers. Ohio, likewise, swings with Florida. Current tallies show that outside of a few cities, the Rust Belt swung in President Trump's direction. Yet Biden leads in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin because of an apparent avalanche of black votes in Detroit, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. Remember that point. Avalanche of black votes in Detroit, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee. Patrick goes on to say that Biden's winning margin was delivered almost entirely from such voters in these cities, that's Detroit, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee, and coincidentally, his black vote spiked only in exactly the locations necessary to secure victory. Meaning overall, he didn't increase in black voters, he decreased. But where statistically it had to make a difference, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee, he zoomed to the top. Now, he did not receive comparable levels of support among comparable demographic groups in comparable states, which is highly unusual for a presidential victor. Again, another statistic. If you look at the nation as a whole, if you look at media as a whole, if you look at nation getting fed the same stuff by pollsters and media, how can it be so statistically out of whack that across the nation, the vote shows going to President Trump, but only in the cities of Detroit, Philadelphia, and Milwaukee, was it actually flopped in the way of Joe Biden? This is what makes it suspect. Again, another fact historically has precedent after precedent after precedent. And again, we're only looking at it for numbers, stats, and history, and what stands out to you. Now, we're told that Joe Biden won more votes nationally than any presidential candidate in history. Think about that. One statement. We're told that Biden won more votes nationally than any presidential candidate in history. I think we can all agree that JFK was a rock star, that Ronald Reagan was a rock star, even that Obama was a rock star. Those three men, regardless of where you were in the media, were always in the media and America loved them. Let's set President Trump aside. But Joe Biden, think of it on the face of it. Think of it in his presence, his delivery, his acuity. We are being told that Joe Biden won more votes nationally than any other presidential candidate in history. Now let's look under the hood. What's important here is Biden won a record low of 17% of county. We're taking the states, we're looking down at the counties. Biden only won 524 counties, as opposed to the 873 counties Obama won. Again, look at the stat. He won a full third less of the counties, but somehow Biden outdid Obama in the total votes or anyone ever. This is where the math presents irregularities. Victorious presidential candidates, especially challengers, usually have down ballot coattails. You know what down ballot coattails are? That's where the person up top is such a rock star that he drags all the other races, Senate, Congress, all through with him. Well, another startling fact. Biden didn't, by the way. The Republicans held the Senate and enjoyed a red wave in the House. They gained a larger number of seats, winning all 27 toss-up contests. There were 27 that could go either way. They won every one of them. Now again, if you are a landslide type president, usually there is a down ballot coattail ride. Biden didn't have this. But if you look at President Trump's party, They did not lose a single state legislature and actually made gains at the state level. They went up, not down. But yet, Joe Biden supposedly got the most presidential votes in history. Of course, I'm talking about an article by Patrick Basham, and that's Basham, that he wrote for The Spectator. And we're looking at some of these anomalies. Some of these just don't add up. Put political parties aside, because the theme here is, if we cannot have safe, authentic, verifiable elections, what does it mean for the history of America? That's what we're inspecting more right after this.
The president of Coke once said, Joe Farn set his hair on fire with tons of new ideas. So, while you pat out the fire on your head, let's give Joe Farn a break. Be right back, right after this.
Your business ideas need room to run wild, but there's no room for error when you're raising the bar. A reliable partner can make a real difference. That's the role of a realtor, an irreplaceable expert who represents your values, a reassuring voice of reason helping you research and reach the right decisions so you can run your business without running the risk. Is your agent a realtor? Look for the R. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
Did you know Joe Farn gets fingered by almost a billion people a day? Yep, that's every time they use certain features on their mobile device and click it with their finger to make it work. And they don't even know his weird brain came up with that. Now back to the show.
Now The Spectator, and the article we're talking about is Patrick Basham's article for The Spectator. And he's pointing out just the various anomalies in this 2020 election. Another anomaly writes about is found in the comparison between the polls and the non-polling metrics. Okay, we already know the polls were not on again. 2016, they were way off. They had 4 years to get their stuff together. Still did the same thing. Polls were off. Now, if we were to look at non-polling metrics, some of that includes party registration trends, the candidates' respective primary votes, candidate enthusiasm, and social media followings. And then, of course, that means things you also look at it like digital and broadcast media ratings, online searches, and especially numbers of small donors. And that kind of gives you an idea of the individuals out there that are actually betting on a candidate. And so looking at all these different things, and you look at the numbers of enthusiasm, who showed up for a presidential candidate, who didn't, who has a massive social media following, who doesn't, who draws the big crowds, who doesn't. All of those are non-polling metrics you can look at. And I think all of us can agree something was askew. Most importantly is, how do you campaign for being the president of the United States but never leave your home, or never really go out there and work it? Now, Patrick says, despite poor recent performances, media and academic polls have an impressive 80% record predicting the winner during the modern era. But when the polls err, non-polling metrics do not. See, non-polling metrics, they have a 100% record of predicting. They can be used as a hardcore predictor of who will become president. See, every non-polling metric forecast went President Trump's way. It said that President Trump would be reelected. For Trump to lose this election, the mainstream polls needed to be correct. And they weren't either. Furthermore, Trump to lose, not only did one or more of these metrics have to be wrong for the first time ever, but more importantly, every single one of them had to be wrong. And that, at the very same time is very, very unlikely. Now, it's not an impossible feat, but it is extremely unlikely. Again, more indicators of, hey, should we take a closer look at this? Patrick goes on that atypical voting patterns married with misses by polling and non-polling metrics should give observers pause for thought. Adding to the mystery is a cascade of information about the bizarre manner in which so many ballots were accumulated and counted. I'm going to take you through a few of those. Think about these as I say them. Let's look at number one. Late on election night, with President Trump comfortably ahead, many swing states stopped counting the ballots. Why would you just stop? Do you ever remember that? Do you remember that in 2016 that the polls, oh, we're just going to stop. We're going home for the night. I thought that was weird. It was called at 10:30. We're going home. Well, when they called stop counting for the ballots and they said, okay, we're just done for tonight, what happened is in most of the cases across the nation, the observers were removed from the counting facilities. Except when the observers were removed, the counting resumed and it was continued without observers. Do you remember when you first heard that come across the media that, well, they've just closed for the night, they'll pick up tomorrow? This is a presidential election. Think back to every election you've ever watched waiting for results. Have you ever seen that to happen before? Question, why did it happen now? Take a look at this one. Patrick writes, statistically abnormal votes counts where the new normal when counting resume. What that means is, okay, they kicked everybody out, said we're not counting anymore for the evening. When the observers left, the counting resumed. And all of a sudden, when they zoomed, those statistically abnormal vote counts now became the new norm, meaning when all of a sudden the tables flipped, that new flip was the norm for the rest of the vote. Here's the example. They were usually and very unusually large in size, hundreds of thousands, meaning they had, like Biden, 90% above to a Trump ratio. Now, during observer time, that did not occur. Then they stopped and say we're done for the evening, but then they kept on. And then all of a sudden, there's a zoom where it completely flipped, 90% and above to Biden. Does that not give you some pause? Another issue that Patrick brings up is late arriving ballots were counted. They weren't supposed to be, but they were counted. In Pennsylvania, 23,000 absentee ballots have impossible postal return dates. And another 86,000 have such extraordinary return dates, they raise serious questions. In past elections, these would have been thrown out. In this one, they weren't. Think about these, and when I come back in my closing comments, I'm going to give you a few more just to think about. And then the question we all have to think about, regardless of where you are party affiliation-wise, is what happens if our voting systems in the United States of America become compromised? Now, you may get excited about one party or another winning, but have you ever thought about the ramifications of that? But more importantly, put party aside, are you prepared to deal with a system that openly acknowledges your voice, your vote, your voice, your vote no longer matters? That's what we're discussing. I'll be right back right after this.
Your host for this program is Jovan Hutton Pulitzer, the internet pioneer who created Scan to Connect and Scan Commerce. You know, while you're able to scan codes with your mobile device and get information. So hang tight, we'll be right back.
Technology Truths, brought to you by Geico.
Technology Truths.
Truth, you think you can solve any problem by turning your computer off and on.
Hey man, is something wrong with your laptop?
Nah, just need to turn it off and on. It's no problem.
It's smoking. Yeah, that just means it needs to reboot.
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at Geico.com.
And now it's on fire.
Happens all the time. It's all good.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. No more fucking ABBA.
We're back. This podcast will give you a massive dose of tech and business savvy. So let's get started. Here's Jovan.
So I'm talking about an article that Patrick Basham wrote about in The Spectator. We're taking a look at voting in America. The whole globe is watching. It's not just each of you wishing that a president would be declared and America could go on. But that's the big question. Can America go on if our election system has been officially compromised? Are we witnessing the falling of a nation? I can remember as a child growing up and Russia was the enemy and we were going to get hit with an atomic bomb. The useless exercise we used to do is have to crawl under our little bitty desk in elementary school and cover our heads. Of course, we would have been vaporized in a moment if there really was a nuclear bomb, but that made us feel safe. But is America safe anymore? Will America be safe if it no longer matters what its citizens want? Is America safe if it no longer matters who you vote for, that somebody else chooses who wins? Now, the reason this grand experiment of the United States of America works, in my own opinion, is because we have checks and balances, because systems can change and X party can be in power for this while and X party can be in power for this while, but they kind of keep things balanced because no one way can go too far. That is why America's work compared to other countries where one way went too far. If you look at countries that have fallen, and this is just me adding context to this, but if we look at failed states, countries that have fallen apart, that just imploded, a few things were common. Lack of property rights, out the door. Forced labor, meaning people didn't really have choices of jobs, but they had to work and they were forced to work. Or the playing field got tilted too far, meaning one party came in, and that party sucked up all of the skilled jobs or professions, and everybody else was left for the menial labor. That was when the playing fields tilt. Or when parties come in and say, we're going to liberalize the nation, and what happened is the big businessmen who supported the regime actually were the big greedy men, and they got all of the multimedia, the telecommunication companies, beverage companies, blah, blah, blah. And they actually usurped the profits of the system, not the people at the highest office. One country, Egypt's a good one to look at. That family walked away with $70 billion. $70 billion. If we were to look at Austria and Russia, they blocked technologies that would allow the people more access, that would allow the people more say. And so they started suppressing what people really wanted and only worked to create political power. That's why they went down. And then, of course, if you look at Somalia, they went down for no law and order. If you couldn't decide stuff on the rule of law, if criminality could just run rampant, the country folded. After that, if you got one government and no rule of law, and the cream of the crop of profits is being usurped off the top, then all of a sudden when that's done and the system's heavily suppressed, then you get a weak central government. And a weak central government just becomes the way it is. People just want to keep their job. They don't want to do anything status quo, and they know they have no say. Well, that's what happened to Colombia. And then all of a sudden, when you take property rights and there's not a lot of opportunity and there's not a lot of growth and the politicians get mega rich and their close cronies get mega rich, and then all of a sudden the government becomes weak because it's really only a one-party system, then all of a sudden you start getting bad public services. Bad public services is what brought Peru down. And then all of a sudden, when it's down that far, you get this political exploitation. Think my way, or you're out, or you die, or whatever happens. It's got to be this way. And because you have nothing, and you had no property rights or whatever, you just try to stay within the system. And that political exploitation is what killed Bolivia. And then all of a sudden, when the country is in total spoils, decade after decade after decade after decade, and this becomes the system, and you have no infrastructure, and you've only got one party, and it's all corrupt, and there are no property rights, and there is no rule of law, and everything's just about payoffs, then what little spoils are left, people rise up and just try to fight for the spoils versus the country, and they don't care what happens. It's just they want to plunder. They want to make their share. And that is what took down Sierra Leone. These all have trend. If your vote doesn't count and you lose your voice. And that's what we're talking about. Primarily, it's an article in The Spectator by Patrick Basham. Here's some of the other anomalies. There was a complete failure to match signatures on mail-in ballots. Those would have been thrown away in previous elections. They weren't in this one. And in fact, the way to match the signature, do you understand what that is? It's not only on the sheet where you vote. It actually is on your mail-in envelope, too. It's kind of a three-part check. It's not only you and the system. It's does it match the outside envelope and does it match the sheet of paper? And some people think it's about, well, you got to go look at your DMV records and does the signature match? No, there's at least supposed to be two right there. Because statistically, if it was really you filling it out, you're going to sign the envelope and you're going to sign the sheet. Well, all of a sudden in this election, those mail-in envelopes were destroyed. Why was that allowed? It's because those mail-in envelopes were supposed to contain signatures and they didn't. And it was actually just phony ballots. The rejection rate affects every bit of this. Okay. And now, historically low absentee ballot rejection rates, despite the massive expansion of mail voting, is one of the anomalies you have to look at. Meaning, in past elections, a certain amount of those absentee votes were always thrown out. And it's because they didn't follow the rules. However, in this particular election in 2020, almost everything was accepted. Meaning, things that would have thrown out ballots before as not being valid were thrown aside. Everything was counted. Even if it was wrong, it was counted. And what happens is some of the political analysts, like Robert Barnes observes, if the states simply imposed the same absentee ballot rejection rate as recent cycles, then President Trump would win the election. Why is that anomaly allowed when it's never been allowed before? That's what makes you think, wait a minute. What changed this? Then there's missing votes. Did you know that in Delaware County, Pennsylvania, that 50,000 votes, which should be able to be audited, which were held on 47 USB cards, are missing? You're supposed to be able to check the data, but 47 USB cards are missing? Another thing, non-resident voters. You know, can't run across a state line and vote, and you can't go back to your old state and vote if you no longer live there. But in Georgia, Patrick points out, that the Voter Integrity Project estimates that 20,312 people no longer met residency requirements to cast ballots in Georgia. Biden's margin is 12,670 votes. Normally, those would have been thrown out immediately, but in this case, they're not. There's also items that Patrick points out in The Spectator that there is a serious chain of custody breakdowns in valid residential addresses. How are you voting as this is your residence when there is no such residence? Record numbers of dead people voting. Ballots in pristine condition. You have to understand what that means. See, these ballots are machine folded, put into multiple envelopes, and mailed through the post office. If you've ever had anything mailed to you, you know it's crinkly, crankly, ugly, and dirty, right? And then you get it, you open it, and you crinkly, crankly, ugly, dirty it, and you send it back, and it gets twice dirty. So how are there ballots that were in pristine condition with not a single crease in them, which means they were not mailed and they were not handled in the mail system, weren't folded and put in those envelopes as required by law? Think about that one. Let's look at some other statistical anomalies, and this will be my closing one. In Georgia, Biden overtook Trump with 89% of the votes counted. 89% of the votes counted. However, For the next 53 batches of votes counted, Biden led Trump by the exact same 50.05% to 49.95% in every single batch. Not a single batch up to that time was exact. Not a one. However, for 53 final batches of votes, President Biden led Trump by the exact same number, 50.05% to 49.95%, meaning a little half a point dally there, right? In every single batch. That is an anomaly. And what's particularly perplexing is that all the statistical anomalies and tabulation abnormalities were in Biden's favor. So what Patrick points out and what I want you to think about is whether the cause was simple human error or nefarious activity or a combination thereof, something happened. He ends with, if you think that only weirdos have legitimate concerns about these findings and claims, maybe the weirdness lies in you. And there's where I agree with Patrick. With no regard to your Democratic affiliation, in our republic, in a democracy, I do not care what side you're on. That is your right. That is your free will. But as a liberal, a conservative, a progressive, an independent, I don't care, the Green Party, the Weed Party, the Tea Party, it does not matter. Everybody should want integrity in elections. Everybody should want integrity in elections. And it does not make you a cretin or a weirdo or a crank or a conspiracy theorist to have legitimate concerns about these findings. For you that are younger, millennials, Zers, might be jumping up and down in the streets because you support Antifa and you've been told by the system that America is the horrible oppressor. I can tell you, most people have felt like that at some time or another, and then you start earning real income, building companies, being the signature on the front of the check versus the back of the check, and some of your views change, and you begin to understand why our system works as incredible as it does, and you ultimately end up changing party affiliations. Wouldn't it be a horrible thought that if all of a sudden the system changed and that became the system forever, and the system never changes, but your thoughts about the system do? What do you do then? What do you think's fair then? If you have the typical American dream of owning property and owning a home, what happens then if those rights are taken away? Is a temporary win worth it to know that your voice will never matter again? See, so this is not about left or right. This is about what's right, period. The reason America works and we're the country that people want to break into is because our systems has its problems. There's probably always been these errors and issues and nefarious activities, but not on this scale. You're looking at what could change the face of America and republics and make it go away, just like every great nation has that didn't stand its ground, didn't stand for law, and manipulated the rules to benefit one particular class of people or politicians. And so I ask you, don't discount these anomalies. Ask for answers. Because it is in answers and finding answers and correcting the errors, regardless of the side, that you consider the path for your children and your grandchildren. Because if this goes away, your children will not live in a nation as great as you grew up in. Your grandchildren certainly won't. And their dreams, their goals, their desires will no longer be attainable. So ask yourself, shouldn't all of these anomalies be looked at to make sure that never again in the history of the great United States of America that any party should be able to change or manipulate and do these things, and that the only thing that should matter is the voice of the people, not the voice of the system. And when we truly have the voice of the people, then maybe politicians will understand they work for us. And the results, when that happens, can only greatly benefit the United States of America, you, your family, your children, great-grandchildren, and on. Think about it. Much is at stake. Thank you.
Wow, that went by fast.
Thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer live. And as Jovan says, if you can dream it, you can do it. Speaking of doing it, let's do this again next time. Find Jovan on all social media.
Or search hashtag Jovan Hutton Pulitzer.
Or by visiting jovanhuttonpulitzer.org.
Until next time.